Hey, let's go answer the bell, huh?
If we just know what we're doing, work at it, and concentrate and do it.
Let's go, fellas! Go!
Here we go. All right. Welcome into another episode of the Patriots Podcast. I'm Sean. He's JJ.
Hello.
We are here to talk about another Super Bowl appearance from the Patriots. Dude, we've been doing this for 5 years, and they've been in the Super Bowl four times.
We're going again. We're going again. Joe Tooney going to be the first player in NFL history to start three NFL Super Bowls for his first three NFL seasons.
That's a joke.
Devin McCourty has been to every year he's played, he's been to an AFC championship, and a majority of the seasons he has been to a Super Bowl. He has been to more Super Bowls than he hasn't.
Yeah. Does that work out? Yeah. 5 out of 9 years.
It does. It's a joke.
The only pushback I have is his first season, 2010, they didn't make the AFC championship. But
no, they didn't. It's been 9 straight. I'm sorry.
It's been 8 straight AFC championships.
8 straight. Is it 8 straight?
Yeah. He was here the game before that. The 9 you're thinking of is 9 total Super Bowls for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
That's okay. That's where the 9 comes in.
That's what you're thinking of. And yes, everyone else out there, no other franchise has more than 8. Tom Brady has been to more Super Bowls than any other franchise.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep. That's it.
That's one of the great stats out there.
And if he wins Sunday, he has as many Super Bowl championships as any other Super Bowl wins, Super Bowl victories as any other franchise, him and Bill.
Yes. Yeah. With the Patriots, yeah, in their current positions. Yeah. I mean, Bill's already got 7.
Yeah, right.
His Giants ones. I don't know. There's probably some like strength and conditioning coach out there that's got 8 rings.
Yeah, it wasn't. There's a few guys like that that have like 6, 7, 8 rings, something like that.
Not players.
Not players. Not coaches. Players. But for a player, there's never been a player that is. I mean,
no players. He's already got 6.
No players have had 6. He will have tied the franchise lead. That's
for wins,
crazy.
Yeah, I know. For wins, he's already surpassed them for appearances. I especially like that this is 3 in a row. I mean, it would have been great to get the one last year and possibly get 3 in a row because no team's ever won 3 in a row. Mm-hmm. Super Bowls, that is. I'm pretty sure somebody won 3 back-to-back-to-back NFL championship for the Super Bowl era. But I like that it's 3 in a row. They've been to 3 in a row because that hasn't happened since the Bills did in the early 90s.
Yeah, it's been a while.
You forget what incredible accomplishment that was. I mean, they got their teeth kicked in all 4 of those. Well, the last 3 of those Super Bowls, they lost by a fucking hair on a Scott Norwood field goal in the first one.
Yeah,
but yeah. It's cool that they've made it 3 years in a row, and then they have the chance to play. Doesn't it? It's always. I guess last year was a bit different because they were playing a team that strength was the defensive line, and I mean this year's team is also. But
is the exact same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this team is number 2 in the NFL in offense. It's not like the defensive line is the premier part about this team.
Right. True.
The premier part is their offense. Yep. They just happen to also have a once in a generation defensive player on the defensive line there.
Much.
What we can't just skip ahead of one of the classics that the Patriots have ever played. This AFC Championship game in Kansas City where they go in and do exactly what everyone thought they were going to do, which is just turtle ball. Just run the ball between the tackles, possess it, play sound defense, and then make Patrick Mahomes try to beat him in like 20 minutes of possession.
And that's exactly what they did.
That's what happened. Yeah, I think.
And they won.
Just under 21 minutes of time possession.
Yeah.
We've talked about this. It's been like a week and a half since this game, and I know some of you, most of you, if you're real Patriots fans, you're never going to get this. Is unbelievable.
It was insane. Well, it's their first road victory in a playoff in how long? What is it, since 2004 or something?
Well, they don't play that many.
2006?
They won, a road playoff game in San Diego.
I mean, it's true. They don't have to do it that much, but like they've done it and they've lost, you know, recently.
Yeah, in Denver.
It's like if they weren't playing at home, it's like, we really didn't have much of a chance. We knew about that. Well, yeah, I guess just in Denver a couple times.
Yeah,
they always screwed with us. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
they did exactly what
we thought they were going to do. And you and I talked about this last weekend that it really starts and ends with the offensive line. Holy shit, what a game to them!
Yeah, they're looking unbelievable. And I know after this game, people have been talking about them as the possibly the best in the playoffs and all this stuff. And people, now people are even starting to say, well, people are overrating him too much, but you can't. They dominated.
Absolutely dominated.
You know, combination between them and Brady complementing each other. It's like Brady it's unbelievable that Brady just knows how to get rid of the ball so quick. So it does help them out so much because, I mean, sometimes he's getting the ball out in 2 seconds. I mean, it's 5-10 degrees out over there and he's still getting rid of the ball to an open guy in 2 seconds.
Yeah, on average, it was 2.3.
Right. So right there, you're going, okay, that's incredible. And then, you know, the pass rushers, they get tired. Game plans, they have to figure out a different way to stop him. Then he starts getting more and more time as the game progresses. And then you're like, oh, my God, look, now he's making throws downfield. He can look for the open guy. And it's just, you know, it wasn't a perfect game. And I wouldn't say it was Brady's best game by any means, but like when push came to shove, they did what they had to do and they got up early, which was huge.
Yeah, it was gigantic. I know the game plan for me was just brilliant, and we've seen it before. It's not like they reinvented the wheel here, but what they figured was like, look, they could have scored more than 31 points if they wanted to, the Patriots, and that's if they got more possessions. You know, if they got the ball more often, I think they would have scored at easily the same clip. But what they decided to do instead was to possess the ball longer so that you shorten the game, limit the number of possessions that are going around. And what that ends up working out to be is, I mean, our offense ran 94 plays.
Yeah, I was 94 just gonna say,
plays. You do not you don't run 80 plays and lose. Never mind running 90-plus plays. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And so we ran the ball 48 times, most of them, almost all of them, right up the middle, like right up the middle. And we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago before this game that the Chiefs lacked depth on their defensive front. It was the strength of their defense, but they had no depth. So you need to wear them down. You run the ball 48 times and run 94 plays, they're fucking worn down.
Yep.
So you got the clock moving. You're limiting the number of possessions that the Chiefs offense has. You're moving the ball down the field. You're exhausting their defensive. You're making them, in the second half, they adjusted, finally. Remember how we weren't running the ball well in the second half?
Yeah.
They finally put in their fat defense. And then we kept running it because it keeps the clock going, keeps that
and
fat
we were
defense
up.
On the
and
field.
And we were up.
And we were up, which was huge. And then this is where everything swings. We actually get down in the 21-17. And then, I don't know about you, but I'm looking at it like, oh, shit, our defense, it probably already has gotten as many stops as they were going to get.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So this is just going to be about timing it out so the Patriots have the ball as the last possession.
The one thing that surprised me in the end was I was expecting them to have a turnover. They were getting pretty lucky with the ball. The Chiefs, in a few, there was a couple plays that we should have picked it off, or the ball's on the ground, and they kept getting lucky. It's like, that's going to swing our way at some point. You know what I mean? I kept having that feeling. But yeah, the whole game plan, I mean, the fact that we were, you know, and we were, you, to your point of that we would have scored more points, I mean, Brady had two picks, the first one in the freaking end zone, which I hated that freaking call. I mean, I know, you know, I understand that you want to catch them off guard or something like that, but I feel like you see all these big plays in the end zone when you're on the one or whatever. Unless it's a very well-designed play, it gets picked off. Unless you throw it so nobody can catch it, it generally gets picked off. We won a Super Bowl on a pick like that. You know, all different types of stuff like that. Plus, they're expecting us to run because we were running the ball so well, and we decided to throw the ball over the middle where all 11 players on their defense were. It's like, come on, Josh, why did you make that call? I would have taken a full back dive or anything. I don't even care if you get it. If you can get the 3 points, you know, that would have helped, those 3 points. We would have won the game with those 3 points.
Yeah.
Now, that's all in hindsight.
But I would have liked to see James Devlin get the ball on a handoff up the middle at some point.
Right.
We can question their fourth and short play calls when you got that interception in the end zone. Rex Burkhead jumps over somebody to get a first down on a third and one.
Someone grabbed his ankle, stuffed.
It worked the first time on third and one, barely. And then they ran the exact same play, and I'm like, dude, they've already seen this, and they almost gotcha. And you run that on fourth and one? That's bullshit. I know. If we're going to talk about short yardage, the I would have liked to see Devlin get the ball at least once, but what they pretty much do is they line up in their big fat package and talk about the Patriots offensive. And then if you put four defensive tackles or four big fatties right in the middle, like pinched in every gap right up the middle, they run that off tackle play. It goes way all the way back to Corey Dillon. They've been running that off tackle play.
Yeah.
And so it's between if you put everybody in, you run the off tackle play. If you don't put everybody in and you keep spaced out to prevent the off tackle, quarterback sneak. Quarterback sneaks, no fullback dives. They finally figured out the off tackle play late in the fourth quarter and overtime.
Right.
That's what they scored the last two touchdowns on. But for some reason, they just kept plugging the A gap even after they stuffed it at least twice.
Right.
So,
which, I mean, an interesting choice. They won the game. Luckily, obviously, they won the game. And these would all have been much more critical if they lost. But, you know, going up 14 was huge. You know, everyone's saying, oh, they blew a 14-point lead. I've heard people saying that. It's like, no shit, they blew a 14-point lead. They were in freaking Kansas City at 10 to however bad the freaking cold it was, in the most explosive offense. I mean, they scored two of their touchdowns in like 30 fucking seconds.
Yeah, they scored, what, 24 points in the fourth quarter and had the ball for 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes?
Something like that. I mean, was it that insane?
That insane. Well, one of the first touchdown they scored, they drove all the way down the field in the third quarter and then scored like right in the beginning of the still.
Oh, right. Fair enough.
So if you added that in, it's like 7 minutes, but still it's like 2.5 minutes, 24 points.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of them was a no call and a pick play, which I'm sure we'll get to in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they scored that fast. You knew they were going to score. I mean, we were looking at going into the fourth quarter and go, oh, my God, what if we stop them again? Is it possible we stop again? No, it's not possible.
We didn't. Happen.
And it's like, you know, that he finally, you know, Mahomes figured it out. They were beating the shit out of him. Not as badly as Rivers, but, you know, that's a pretty good offensive line. And we were kicking the crap out of them.
I know. All the talk from everyone was the Chiefs defensive line led the league in sack. Patriots offensive line has been good. Is getting better. It's probably better than the Chiefs offensive line. I think everybody would agree with that. But it was going to be about the Chiefs pass rush, not the Patriots rush.
Right.
And that totally flipped.
They've been calling some great defensive plays with an all out blitz. It's a zero cover where they just send like six guys. They're like, oh, you're blocking with five guys, we're sending six. Or you're blocking with six guys, we're sending seven. Like that's what we're doing. And it's awesome. In certain situations, and they try to do it later in the game. I think it's great when they don't expect it, but if they expect it, obviously you can figure out how to beat it. They called that a few times in the first half before the Chiefs knew what was going on, and they kicked the crap out of Mahomes. He was limping. We thought he was fucked up. I mean, there was like one no call that should have been they called on Brady that they didn't call on him, which was stupid. That was I think anyone will think of it. Agree with that.
Yeah.
Roughing a passer where he got hit in the face mask, and Brady, the same thing happened to him, and they didn't. One got called, one didn't. Whatever. It's garbage, but there were some plays like that throughout this game.
Yeah, we can go. I got a little rundown right here.
Of all the stuff?
Yeah.
Go for it. Larry, you want to start?
Sure, yeah. I don't know why Brady's interception got on this list, but so it was the Edelman punt return, seems like the first one.
Yeah.
Where they overturn, say he didn't touch it. I couldn't see anything that looked like he touched it, but I was surprised they overturned it, because usually it's the inconclusive shit. Then you got the Chris Jones roughing the passer, the call that didn't go against the Patriots, goes against the Chiefs. After that, the J.C. Jackson pass interference on the right sideline.
Yeah.
That one, it was like a 40-yard pass to Sammy Watkins. They call it on J.C. Jackson. It was the same play that Van Noy went low on Mahomes, and they called the roughing the passer, but they waved that off and went with the PI. So it wasn't that big a difference, but there's that. Then there was the offensive pass interference non-call on the Sammy Watkins long touchdown. I thought that was incredibly...
That was the worst one.
Such a huge missed call.
Belichick smashed his surface and threw it at the bench.
Yeah, he got pissed. Stupid thing. After that
was agreed. That was definitely. I was pissed about that one.
And then there was Chris Hogan's third down catch that, for the life of me, it looked like it hit the ground and moved. The like one handed catch he made on that clutch third down play. D Ford's offsides. I love that people are complaining about this. I fucking love it. They go, yeah. It's a penalty, but you don't make that call. That's like, my favorite excuse ever.
Yeah, it's like that is the one fucking, one of the very few black and white plays
so
that you call.
And then the coin toss. People are bitching about the coin toss. Oh, I mean, why does the away team always get to pick the coin toss? Why is it a coin toss that decides who gets the first possession? How come it's only one possession? Patrick Mahomes is the MVP. Give him a possession. That's what people are saying.
No, I know about the possession thing.
Yeah.
And that pisses me off just because it's you know, people complaining about it. Should we talk about that? I guess we're already on it. Might as well.
Yeah
the reffing through this game. Right. It's just all coming out. All coming out here. The reffing in this game overall was spotty. The reffing all weekend was very spotty. It seemed like they would let them, they're trying to let them play, and in letting them play, they're making some, the things they're calling, it's like, so why'd you call that versus that? You know what I mean?
Like the roughing the passer makes no sense.
The roughing, and that's what it's coming down to. It's like, oh, they want to try and make it play unless somebody starts making a case or somebody's telling them look for something. So, you know, it's definitely a tough job for the refs to do. Maybe they're getting some calls and saying, hey, don't call anything on this. Let it just happen. You know, if somebody was going to call in and say that, I would believe it if somebody told me that. But, yeah, the coin toss thing, it's like you saw why that doesn't matter. This weekend was a perfect example of why that didn't matter, because one team got the ball and drove down and won, and the other team with the unbelievable offense too got the ball and they threw an interception.
Talk about the Saints. Yep.
Talking about the Saints. I'm sorry if I didn't clarify that. So two teams there, one won, one lost, or one, you know, capitalized on the coin toss, one didn't, and yep, you had a different outcome in the game. So right there shows that, hey, it doesn't work that bad. Yeah. If the defense can make a fucking play, and everyone goes, oh, well, it's turning towards offense, it's an offensive game now, you're not giving anything towards the defense. It's like, eh, they're not calling those games too strict. It looks like the Saints got screwed on that one. They also got a second chance. But they let the defense dictate what happened on the Saints' last drive with, the ridiculous no call on multiple penalties. But they got a second chance. They got the ball. They could have put it away. And what happened? They got slammed to the ground, threw a pick. And everyone's saying, you know, this, that, or the other thing about that play. But it's like the Saints were losing that game.
Oh, yeah. The whole team imploded after that missed call.
That's it. They couldn't focus. They sucked.
Totally sucked. Yeah, that was the biggest thing that I learned from that game was the Rams got down 14-0 and they fought back.
They did.
Rams were resilient.
The Saints
Saints got one bad call against them and they folded.
Yeah, they had that game in their hands.
Yeah, they had the ball, in, as you said, to start overtime at home.
Right. And then you have the people also complaining that the Patriots on the Tom Brady threw a pick on the play that what's his name was lined offsides.
D Ford
was lined offsides, and it's like, well, that's a penalty. So if they wanted to call the play dead, they could have called the play dead.
You don't call the play dead on that.
You don't. You're not supposed to.
Offsides, it's not unabated to the quarterback. He didn't touch anybody on
offense.
He just
lined up wrong.
That's the exact type of play that you don't whip. And the guy, you can watch the replay. The guy threw the flag before Brady threw the ball. It's not like he goes, oh, Gronk's going to tip it up in the air and it's going to get intercepted. Let me save the Patriots and throw
this little flag. The flag was on the field before that happened.
He just fucking threw the flag. He just did his job.
Right. And like anyone saying it's this is fair, that's fair. Well, you know, sure, the game would have been over there. Well, the game wouldn't have been freaking tied, or we would have still been winning if they called the awful pick play when it was a pick 10 yards downfield and it's supposed to happen in the first yard of the line of scrimmage. Yeah. And it wasn't even like, oh, it was 10 yards downfield and he shielded him. He got like tackled 10 yards downfield.
But the Patriots run pick plays too.
Right. That's fine.
But did you see, like,
not that bad?
Exactly.
That was terrible. Yeah.
When you watch when you watch an overtime drive, you know how Edelman was running those crossing routes? He'd have the short motion and then he'd be right next to another receiver and he'd run a crossing route. All he would do is the receiver next to him would run straight down the field, would cut underneath him, and then the defender would have to get around that guy or cut underneath.
That's a natural pick play.
Right. Natural. What the guy on the Chiefs did, I wish I knew who the receiver was that threw suplex. He ran directly into the guy that was covering Sammy Watkins and put both hands on his chest.
Yeah, 8 yards downfield.
And pancaked him. He got him on the ground.
8 yards downfield. And that was before the ball was in the air.
Yeah, and it wasn't the ball. I think there's some rule, like if the ball is thrown behind the line of scrimmage, you might be able to do something like that. Not the case at all. It was textbook offensive pass interference.
And they'll probably use that in the future.
It was on second and 10, and it resulted in a 45-yard touchdown. You're talking about them being pushed on their side of the 50-yard line, second and 20. That's a shit position to be in, and instead they're in the end zone with a lead.
Right, so anyone bitching, it's like it went both ways. It went both ways. I mean, that's you want to say it favored the Patriots a little bit? Fine. I don't give a shit. Most games, you know, it's like it's going to be incredibly possible to get it to a 50-50. Okay, it worked perfectly. You know, they called the perfect game. I don't think anyone's called the perfect fucking game.
Yeah. When you lose, you gripe. And when you win, people forget about the bad calls. And then they think it was one-sided just because what are you complaining about if you won? Whereas you look in New Orleans and it's like they got... It's like somebody stole their firstborn. They're so upset.
Literally.
Their billboards, the owners talking about it.
They wanted
I've seen the replay. It's not that black and white. Look, I thought it was definitely pass interference, but if you're at a certain angle and your depth perception is off, you might not realize that the ball wasn't there yet when he hit him.
No, right.
Now, he hit him hard, but if the ball is there, he's allowed to do that. So then you're like, was the ball there? Maybe if your depth perception is off and you can't tell.
See, the only thing I have to say about calls like that is you could have called, you're saying the helmet to helmet might not have been a call because the ball was close enough and stuff like that. When they slow it down, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you can tell. But obviously in real time, it's much more, it wasn't like the ball was 20 yards away still or something. It's like the ball was within 5 yards of where they were, maybe 10. It was going pretty fast. It's kind of tough to tell. I thought they should have called it. And the way to fix shit like that, isn't there like a head ref watching somewhere going, hey, that was helmet to helmet. Like,
throw that flag.
Can you throw that flag? Take a look at that. Make a conference. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like even if you just wanted to put it under the banner of player safety and be like, that was, you got to throw it afterwards. That was helmet to helmet. I know you missed it in the split second, but it was. So
exactly.
Pay attention to player safety.
They're talking about challenging fucking penalties. And if a penalty's not called, well, how do you challenge that? And it's like, that will get ridiculous. It's like, let's calm down here. Just player safety. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
You have a guy that's in the booth for player safety, which I think they already have. I thought they had that with the whole new concussion protocol thing. A guy watching for people getting concussions. It's like, where was he during the whole fucking ordeal? He should have said, hey, and you don't even have to tell the guy to make a call. You say, hey, you know, if you see something from the booth pretty quick, you're like, okay, they're not doing anything down there. Radio in, hey, can you guys conference about this? This looked a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Conference.
And then I would say still be in their ear and be like, dude, you have to call this.
Well, just let them do it. And then they'll all get around talking. Oh, yeah, the ball was clearly not there yet, and he hit him. Oh, okay, perfect. I think they would be able to figure that one out. You know what I mean? Just have a little conference. Go have a little conference. Okay, we'll conference. 2 seconds. Boom. All right.
I hate those stupid conferences. It's like if you saw it, you would have called the flag. If you saw it, you would have done it.
But just not like, well. But it's like human nature, though. If you see two people that you think have a better angle than you, and you don't call it, but you think you might have saw something, well, neither of them saw it. So, and I'm kind of far away. Maybe I didn't see what I saw.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe.
You know what I mean?
If they all get
together, one guy's like, you know, maybe. I think that's better than. I mean, what else are they going to do? Either leave it the way it is,
or you could just have the guy upstairs who's watching replays. The same thing. I'm sitting on my couch at home. I shouldn't have a better, more objective
view of what
should be going on the field than the people that are actually making the decisions.
Right. I agree.
You should have as much information as I do. I don't want to be more informed than the referees.
The only thing I can think of that would turn into the thing with the guy in the booth is people would be like, oh my God, they're calling this. They're rigging games.
Yeah, they already think that.
Right.
They're already saying that.
Or put the guy on the field with a big thing of screens.
And then, so
staring
they throw
them.
Their beers at him.
Yeah, just he'll throw the orange flag from behind the screens and be like, nope, that was an egregious penalty. I don't know.
Well, we got to work out the kinks on this, but I think we're onto something.
We're onto something. So, anyways, back to the game.
I wanted to talk about Rex Burkhead. I don't know if you were just like me and like a couple of the other people I've talked to, but I was yelling at the screen for Rex Burkhead to be gone.
Oh, yeah.
Get him out of here.
Yeah.
But the dude scored the last two touchdowns of the game.
He did pretty good.
He won the fucking game. And I know he got stopped in that 4th-and-1. I blame that on the play call. I don't think
I do
put him in a good position.
Bad position.
And he was he was really good down the stretch, but I still think Sony Michel and James White are better. But I guess I didn't realize that Sony had like 30 carries already.
Yeah, Sony, yeah, they'd worked him like a dog up to that point.
Yeah, he must have been cooked.
I didn't mind him some of those plays, like that run 10 yards from the end zone where he just ran in. I thought that was a really good play, both on blocking and his part. I just, it's tough for me when they take plays away from James White.
Yeah.
That's where it really comes. That's right. See, that's where it really comes for me, where it becomes a problem. It's like James White has to be on the field. He is good enough to be on the field almost every play. I don't even give a shit if you put him in the slot, split him out wide, whatever you do when Burkhead's in there. James White should be there. He is too good to be taken off the field for, you know, off the field for, if there were 90 plays, what was he on there? Probably 50, not even 40.
No, it was actually a 30-30-30.
So there you go.
They all were on the field almost the exact same amount of snaps.
He should be on the field more than 50% of the time, every single game.
But that's the thing. They ran the ball more than 50% of the time.
Sure.
He's a passing back. And I know he had a bunch of good conversions on the ground.
He had some great third down runs.
Third and four. I think he converted two or three of them.
Yeah. I mean, the Patriots overall on third down, you know, even though Brady threw a couple picks, it wasn't his sharpest game. He's had, you know, the weather could obviously affected that. But on third down, he was just lights out.
13 of 19, and a lot of them were third and long.
Yeah, a lot of them third and 9, third and 10, third and 11. So overall, Brady really just killed it where he had to. It's like, oh, I need to make a stunning drive right now. I'll do it. They're not stopping me.
I know. That's what I love so much. And we talked a lot about the game plan. And the game plan basically was, we have this plan to put us in a really good position, but we're going to need the greatest quarterback of all time to really pull it out in the
end. Yeah, literally.
It's like, we're going to tire their defense down. We're going to make sure their offense isn't on the field. But at the end of the day, we're going to need to make some big-ass plays, and it's going to be on 12.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it works out. Dude, just another chapter in his legacy.
Right.
Just doing this. I mean, third and 10 three times in overtime. And
41 degree. It's a 41-year-old. In 10-degree weather. I mean, do you know how many 41-year-olds do you know?
I don't know. I don't ask 40-year-olds their exact age.
Well, you know how old they roughly are. Like, okay, that guy's in his early 40s. Throw him out there in that situation. He'd be dead. Hit him once. Dead. Dead. Yeah. Like, not even like, oh, this guy's like hurt out there. No, he'd be dead. It's like,
yeah, he's obviously superhuman.
It's insane that he's doing that.
I just don't know. I'm so obsessed with this game. I've already watched it twice, by the way. Live viewing.
Oh, another two times.
Another two full times.
Wow.
This game was so much fun to watch. And I loved, I mean, we should point out how good Tony Romo was educating us. I've been saying this for a while, that I don't know what analysts are doing. Like your Troy Aikmans, your Chris Collins, they should be educating people and explaining what's happening on the field so that we can understand it. But they don't do that.
They don't go in depth. They're like, here's a running play where he's going to go between the A gaps.
Look at this block. He really kicked his ass. And I like seeing shit like that. But what I hate is Jason Witten getting on there on Monday Night Football and just being like, oh, you really wish he could have caught that ball. Seven. They could really go for 8 yards right now. It's like, oh my God, dude, explain to me what's happening on the field. This guy's tired. This running back's in the game. That means it's leaning towards this type of play call.
Right. Look
what the defense is doing. This is the open area. Can he get there? That's the
Some people
that...
don't like Romo, though. I've heard a lot of Romo
fine,
now.
Fine, fine.
Yeah. I like him.
I'm not obsessed with Romo. I just want to hear more education.
Well, yeah, games. I like when he's explaining the coverages, and he's like, okay, Tom Brady... right here, like this is a perfect look for Julian Edelman because they're bringing the safety down here, and but you know he's explaining the spacings and stuff, and it's like that's pretty intuitive. It's just because he's a smart guy. He knew the game,
and he played quarterback. Reach is helpful. Yeah. And so what I was saying to somebody was if Tony Romo is able to spot the defense or to read the defense, identify the weakness, identify the target, who has to get where, and then be able to process all of that and communicate it to me before they snap the ball in a way mm-hmm. that I can understand.
Yeah.
Is that like 2 + 2 = 4 to Tom Brady? Like, how fucking easy is that? No wonder the defensive coordinator was fired almost immediately. Almost yeah, immediately after that game. If Tony Romo is able to do all of those things before the ball is snapped, it's Tom fucking Brady. He's got a super computer, and you're gonna give him a grade level puzzle. Yeah,
like Romo's in never
in the most impactful plays of the game. They were all on third and 10.
Yeah, and Romo's never been to a Super Bowl. Brady's been to 9. It's like that's how much better he is at it than Romo.
Yeah, so
9 versus 0.
That was a pretty. And I know they were in a tough spot, and they were tired, but they were playing man defense in overtime. They were trying to play a like the more tiring form of defense.
Yeah,
and it was just piss poor.
Well, they were just so gassed. I mean, you're on the field for 80 some odd plays up to that point. It's like you keep getting him in third and longs, and he keeps getting him. It's just it's like at one point, one of the backs was just like fucking throwing his arms around because he didn't know. He's like, how can't we stop this guy? He's like, what's happening out here? And it's so funny because everybody in the goddamn world knew once the Patriots won that coin toss, they're like, game over.
Everyone.
Game over.
Yeah.
Now, do you think if the Chiefs got the ball, they would have won?
Game
over. You think so?
Definitely.
I don't know, man.
Coin toss was the whole game.
It was. I don't know. I feel like something was going to happen. I feel like that ball was getting too... He was throwing that ball in a couple places where it should have been picked. And I was just waiting for one. And he never had one.
When? I don't remember any real dangerous throws from him. I remember him fumbling at the end of the second quarter. Kyle Van Noy played studs.
Unbelievable.
Two games in a row.
Arguably best. Really, the whole fucking defense has played pretty good. Hightower has a really high amount of QB pressures. He's in their face all game. Trey Flowers, unreal. Van Noy has really stepped from being an okay player to great in this playoff.
Yeah, totally.
Like, he has been great. I mean, I don't know if he's as good as Trey Flowers or if, you know, he takes the cake as the most important defender, but he's top three now.
He's so, so important.
And they've got him in a spot that he's really working well with.
Yeah, and he's able to play every game, every snap, which is mm-hmm. not something you could always say about him. Also, on defensive backs, J.C. Jackson, rookie, had 3 penalties against him, I think. And I think he's playing fine. I really do. I mean,
He's playing. I mean, he was on Travis Kelce.
He was on Travis Kelce for like the whole first half.
Yeah. Kelce didn't do shit.
He gave up that touchdown play, and I don't know why he was playing outside leverage, but that was a rookie mistake. He gave up that touchdown. He had a big pass interference that I mentioned earlier that I didn't think was PI. He had another pass interference that was in the end zone that was. Mm-hmm. Blatant PI, like tackled the dude. The holding call, defensive holding on that Travis Kelce fumble later in the game. People forget about that one, but he definitely held the dude. I think he put him on the ground. But besides, I mean, I know those are a lot of penalties, but he's a rookie in a tough spot, and he did a really good job against Kelce and a pretty decent job against Sammy Watkins. They moved Gilmore to Kelce.
You're right. I mean, he's committing penalties, but he's not really committing big plays. Like, or giving up big plays. Like, the guy might get away from him and he realizes that, but he doesn't give him the big play, he'll maybe commit the penalty, which isn't bad. I mean, if he's like you said, he's an undrafted rookie, but I think he's going to get a pick in the coming up.
He totally could.
I'm calling it. And Goff's going to throw a couple.
All the other guys, we really should mention the defense that they put on Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill was like top 3 in the NFL this year in receiving yards, and he got one catch.
Yep.
Against one catch Keon for like 40 Cross. Yards. That's Keon, who was covering him. Can you believe that?
Well, it was him and what's his name was too?
Johnny Jones.
John Jones was doing a lot too.
Yeah.
But and they had just McCourty over the top basically, right?
Yeah, they were totally double teaming him the whole game, which is great. Good job.
Yeah.
They did a remarkable job against him, and I couldn't believe that Andy Reid didn't get the ball to him somehow.
Yeah, like running it or anything.
He'll get a handoff every so often. Give him a jet sweep and nothing.
Nope.
He was like totally absent from that game. Travis Kelce, too. They did an incredible job on some of those guys. And Patrick Mahomes still found a way to put up 31 points rapidly.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's what they did. They took, you know, classic Belichick. He took his 2 security blankets away, said, beat us with your other weapons. And by the time they figured out how to beat us with the other weapons, the game was over.
Yeah, exactly. Damian Williams, 3 touchdowns. Doesn't matter. whatever. You're on the sideline. Oh, his touchdown dances were really, really ticking me at the end there. Yeah, so now the Pats move on to another Super Bowl, Super Bowl 53. They will face the Los Angeles Rams, really almost said, in a rematch Super Bowl 36. One of the better moments of my life when Vinatieri's kick went through. It's up there.
It's pretty good.
Dude, that team had no shot. No shot. They were 14-point underdogs.
Is that that's going to be biggest in Super Bowl era, right?
Well, the other one was the 2007 Giants that beat the Patriots.
And they were 14-point
underdogs. If you ever see a 14-point underdog in a Super Bowl, take them to win. Straight. Yeah. Do it.
That's just a slap in the face as it is.
Yeah, I'm intrigued about some of the similarities between this game and that game. I know clearly there's
it's on the same day, right?
It's on the same day, yeah, February 3rd.
That's kind of crazy. 18 years later, like, how the fuck did they figure that one out?
Right. There's a reversal in terms of Super Bowl experience. That Rams team was coming off of a Super Bowl win 2 years before. Patriots clearly hadn't been recently, most of those players. This team's a bit different, but you got the high-flying Rams, and you have just kind of the gritty Patriots.
Literally.
Yeah, it feels pretty similar. You know, we play with the fullback still.
Patriots. I know.
James Devlin awesome. Played like 45% of the snaps.
More so than James White, which pisses me off, but okay.
But he's useful. He's good.
Yeah. So the Rams, yeah. They were number two offense, number 20th defense, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of points on both sides?
Points and yards, both sides. Very, yeah.
20-2 on both?
20-2 on both. I mean, they were 19th in yards defense.
Sure. Okay, fair enough. But they had
the fifth passing offense, third in rushing offense. They were better in pass defense than rush defense. And I think this is the primary thing to remember here. We said before the Chiefs game that they were allowing 5 yards per carry. Good for second worst in the league. Only one team was worse. It was the Rams.
No way. They're last?
They're allowing 5 point yards per carry. 5.1 yards per carry, guys.
You said 5 point, but yeah. 5.1
yards per
You're
carry.
You're shitting me.
Last in the NFL. Yep.
So, wow. So yeah, we're going to be able to go over this game a little bit here pretty well, but I think it really, to that point, boils down to whoever has a better running game or whoever can stop the running game as a defense will win this game. It's kind of what it's pointing like.
How 1984 of you?
Well, you know, I know. It's funny enough that we're coming down to it, but that's really what it's looking like. So this defensive line, as we know, that we're playing, it's got Michael Brockers. It's got I'm fucking blanking real hard.
Aaron Donald.
Sue.
You remember Michael Brockers and forgot Aaron Donald?
I always liked Michael Brockers a lot. I always thought he was a really fucking great player.
He just looks skinny.
Lost on a Rams team. He was a fucking sick D tackle, and he's like a DN now.
Yeah, well, Wade Phillips is running the same defense he ran in the 70s. He brings his 3-4 wherever he goes, and he does it well. And he turned Michael Brockers into a defensive end, Dominican Sue into a nose tackle, and Aaron Donald into another defensive end.
Right. So we know what they got up front, and then they got Fowler, too, who's almost like an off-edge D-end. But
yeah, he's a perfect 3-4 outside back.
Right. If those guys can't stop, but behind them at linebacker up the middle, they're small guys. Real small fucking guys. And that probably attributes to the 5.1 yards per carry. If those three D tackles up front can't stop the run, it's going to be a long fucking night for them.
Yeah, and you know who knows a little bit about 3-4 defenses?
Mr. Good old Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick has some familiarity with that and might have an insight into some of the weaknesses they're in.
One of the biggest weaknesses has always been running the football, stopping the run because the gaps are so big between the big fatties. And you need big downhill guys to stop the run.
That's why there was always a Ted Johnson back there. There was a Roman Pfeiffer. There were
Brandon Spikes.
Gerard Mayo, downhill linebackers.
That's big, 250, 60-pound guys that could run.
Not Mark Barron, who runs at 215, former safety. Corey Littleton, 225. 6'3", 225, string bean.
Yeah, little fuck.
They're going to have to take on James Devlin and all 265 pounds of him. That fucking, he wears like 2 pounds worth of face mask.
Yeah,
he's just coming in momentum.
It's a friggin' bowling ball. Pod. So even if he, you know, has to take on help on the D end, well, now you have a running back that's the same size as a linebacker. Might as well be a fucking safety without a head of steam. So if they can't stop that, that's a long fucking game for them. Now, on the other side for the Patriots, it really depends to me. C.J. Anderson, now we'll get, I'm sure we'll get into it. The offensive line of the Rams is actually quite fucking good. And if Todd Gurley can't get going, if he pulls out an egg like he did last week, this offense is going to crumble.
Yeah, I'm so curious what's going on there. I clearly don't have an answer. Doesn't seem like really anybody does.
I mean, they basically should. He played really well against in the first playoff game, and then this last playoff game, he had like 4 carries in the second half.
But he still played less than C.J. Anderson.
And he still played less than C.J., who was just a guy off the street.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I mean, he's a Super Bowl champion. He's not like supermarket teller or something.
No, I know, but he literally wasn't signed for what? He got cut and then wasn't signed for weeks.
Yeah, for weeks. I know. It's interesting. Anderson has been effective. He's been good.
Yeah.
Gurley was in the MVP conversation for a reason. 2 years in a row. The guy's a game breaker. He's got the speed that CJ doesn't have. I don't know why he's not getting as many snaps.
He's got to be hurt. I mean, everyone
but
keeps
he's
saying
not on the injury report.
I don't care.
You're required to put him on the injury report.
We They're talk about this asking. Every year. Remember the year when Philip Rivers had a torn ACL and he was not on the injury report?
He wasn't? How do you know?
I don't remember him being on the injury report.
Okay, we should look that up. But the
You think the Patriots asking. Have no one on the injury report and nobody's injured? The guys are all probably dying. It's like, oh, you know, there's nobody on the injury report. Nope, everyone's fine. It's okay, like Pat Chung should have like six, be listed for at least a minimum of 4 or 5 things.
Oh,
Both shoulders, a knee, head, everything. Foot, throw
he
it all
He gets up slow, slow.
I mean, he could.
That dude's in pain.
He could be pulling the Jim Brown technique where always get up slow so they think you're hurt all the time, but you're not. Yeah. But you can see him like gasping for air sometimes, just like, wow.
He looks beat up.
Like 2 torn labrums and shoulders. It's like, you know. So the injury report thing, I don't, and that's what everyone goes by, but like you just said, he's in the contention for MVP the last 2 years he's played, and you bring in C.J. Anderson to play more than him. That doesn't make no goddamn sense.
Yeah, whatever. We're going to see both of them. It's just whether or not Gurley's going to be the one.
If he's effective. It's really if it's effective.
Yeah, but what they've shown in the last 2 weeks, 2 games, is that C.J. Anderson is effective.
Yeah, but he's not.
He's still effective.
I'm not afraid of it. I mean, he's torn us up before. That's when it was snowing in fucking Denver and he kicked the shit out of us.
He's the goddamn reason we had to go into Denver in 2015 to try to beat that team in the AFC.
So that's the only thing I don't like about it. But I just, you know, I think too much runs through. Even in the passing game, C.J. Anderson isn't in the passing game.
You're right. Not nearly as
Todd Gurley is nasty in the passing game. So right there, there's a huge drop-off. And if you drop him off, now they got to beat us over the top with Brandon Cooks, who I think the Patriots are going to do a very fucking good job tying him up. There was a reason they were fine with trading him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's going to get that Tyreek Hill treatment.
He is. Probably. They're just going to put someone over the top, have someone on him man-to-man, and he's out of the game.
Yeah. Before we get too away from the running game here, I just want to point out that in that Saints-Rams game, we had talked about them both having premier offensive lines.
Yeah.
As good offensive lines as you're going to see in the NFL right now, which is admittedly pretty piss poor offensive line play on average. But the Saints, I thought, were the best group out there, and I thought the Rams were in that like top 5 range, which is probably where the Patriots are too, oddly enough, in the top 5.
Yeah.
But what you saw in that game last week was constant pressure on Drew Brees. Constant. Yeah. He was hassled. It goes all the way just right up till overtime. And I was amazed at the conditioning of some of those guys because they don't substitute on their defensive line, and they were putting pressure on him against one of the best offensive line groupings out there. And then conversely, the Rams were protecting, and then when they weren't protecting, it was because there were free rushers on blitzes because they just sent too many guys. And again, you saw that at the end of regulation and into overtime, where they were blitzing to make up for the fact that they couldn't rush the passer at all.
Yeah.
Because the Rams offensive line was taking care of that, and that also speaks to how Gurley can be successful, and then you bring in a dude that got cut by two other teams, and all of a sudden he's successful.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So that old line is a great group.
Yeah, you want to go over them? You got them listed?
I mean, I got them listed in front of me. You guys probably remember Andrew Whitworth. He spent years and years with the Bengals. He's like 38. Dude's the man.
Yeah, he's unstoppable.
At left guard, they have Roger Saffold, who's been a fixture there for years and years. John Sullivan at center. Rob Havenstein at right tackle is a pretty good player. And at right guard.
He's had a great season.
Havenstein's been really good. Yeah, they have bookend tackles. They got strong play in the interior. And Sullivan's a veteran center. They got all. There's no weak links there.
Yeah. So, but like Patriots D-line's got to bring it.
They got to bring it big time. I think Brandon Cooks, because of the speed, is going to be. I think they're going to be less inclined to give up big plays against the Chiefs. I think they want to look. The Rams offense runs through running the ball and doing play action off the running game.
Just like
that's yeah, exactly. It's very very similar to us. And the thing is that the Patriots have that fallback of put Brady back there and Edelman on the side and split Gronkowski out wide and make a play.
Right.
And I don't know if the Rams have that option. They're under center like 70% of the time.
Yep.
I mean, this is what they do. They got bread and butter. And so I don't think that we want to take resources away from the running game to but
well, one of the things I was going to say about the whole, you know, their weapons on offense is Cooper Kupp was a huge part of this offense, and he's no longer there. When this offense was number two offense for most of the, you know, unstoppable, they had a dominant third receiver, and they no longer have that. They had a guy beating man coverages all the time at third receiver, which was huge, and that's kind of what kept this thing going. Now they go to this guy, Josh Reynolds, who hasn't been bad. He's been pretty good.
Not bad.
But he's not, you know, Cooper Kupp was clearly on a pretty good level, or you know, with Goff. So now it comes down to, oh, it's two receivers and a dominant running back as opposed to three receivers and a dominant running back. And I feel like those offenses in the past for Bill Belichick, when they had the three options and a great running back, we lost, or it was a very close game and we had to gut it out. But those games, if two receivers, running back, the tight ends or whatever, and the third receivers or whatever, you might beat them on man coverage sometimes. They might beat you, but they're not. It's not like the guy's going to go off on you. And that's it. You know, Robert Woods, I think Stephon Gilmore, you couldn't have a better matchup.
That is such a good matchup for Stephon Gilmore. That's what I was thinking too.
It's like perfect. Just put him on the game all the whole game. He'll. I mean, he might not shut him down, but he's going to take him out of most of the game.
He's going to do such a good job, I think. Robert Woods is a great route runner. He's got decent quickness. He's not overly fast. He's not overly big. It matches up so perfectly with Gilmore. Gilmore has the physical advantage against him, and he's such a good tactician. I think he's going to do fine against him.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect matchup. You double Brandon Cooks, put a speedster on him, and McCourty over to the top. And then Josh Reynolds, if you look at his size, matches up perfectly with J.C. Jackson.
J.C. Jackson's going to be more physical than Josh Reynolds, definitely.
Yeah, so right there, boom. I love how our secondary matches up against them.
If J.C.'s not playing good, put Jason McCourty in.
Yeah, and if he's not doing good, you can fucking go to one of the other guys, Jonathan Jones.
I think Johnny Jones is going to be on Brandon Cooks.
I think he's going to be. Oh, true. Well, I guess you don't want Keon Crossett in there, but still, you have a secondary option in Jason McCourty.
Exactly.
So pretty, you know, and then that's why I mean it comes down to the running game. So we got you know, the passing game, all right, but if the running game now opens up, now you got the play action going really well for them, all that stuff, that's going to be a lot harder to fuck around with. But it's still, even if they play really good on with the running back, we still have a chance to win pretty well because two receivers and a running back, Belichick knows what to do. That's his forte.
Yeah, they're going to have to. If Gurley is the superstar that we know him to be, that's going to be a real challenge because he is so much faster than Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy.
Yeah.
If they're going to have to try to stick with him on wheel routes and go routes, I mean, we saw Damian Williams spring wide open on a go route that he ran against Van Noy. Patty Mahomes just overthrew.
Yeah.
But that'll be a challenge if he's the guy we think he is. But if he's not, then they can really hunker down and focus. They like to run a lot of jet sweeps and a lot of funky motions, and they have different timing on their snaps. They'll snap it at times that you're not ready for it, which is great. I think it makes for really interesting watching. But it's a lot of just kind of, it's window dressing. They play it up. It's fluff.
Yeah.
And it's, I think the Patriots are probably more disciplined. They're probably disciplined enough that that's not going to be a super big issue, especially with the experience they have at linebacker.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, you look at, yeah.
The defensive end's a different story. I think Trey Flowers would do a great job. Adrian Claiborne, the way that he bit and gave up that big throwback screen pass on the Damian Williams touchdown, yeah. That one really, really sticks with me.
That was tough.
Adrian Claiborne, what the fuck are you doing? You got contain responsibilities, and you're running after Patrick Mahomes, who's got 15 yards on you. You're never going to catch him.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, that definitely would be tough. That's definitely going to be where it where we could have some issues, and that's why I think it comes down to the running game. And you look at the other side of the ball, too, it's, you know, same idea. It's a very similar idea. As we said, if we can beat them and get the play action going and get Brady comfortable where he doesn't have to throw the ball 50 fucking times to win the game, they're going to be screwed.
Yeah.
They're going to be screwed. I mean, like you said, you already mentioned Mark Barron and Corey Littleton. Both of them are less than 230 pounds. Samson Ubukam. How do you know how to say that?
I don't even know.
Ibukam. Ibukam?
Ibukam. Yeah, Ibukam. Something like that. I saw him score in that Chiefs game. He had like two takeaways, and including a touchdown, and I still don't know how to pronounce his name.
He's not that big either. He's only about 240 to 45 pounds. And then Dante Fowler Jr. is decently sized, but, you know, he's only two. I mean, he's bigger, 255. But
he's plenty big, yeah.
Like you said, fullback on that. Now Brady gets things going. And then, you know, they do have Mark Barron's probably pretty good in coverage. I haven't seen anyone be able to cover James White all year.
Corey Littleton is actually their leading middle linebacker. He's usually the one they have in coverage. And you might remember from the game last week that he was matched up with Alvin Kamara a lot, and Kamara had a big day receiving the ball.
Right.
He had like 9 or 10 catches. Yeah. I think that's a pretty good matchup. And you would think somebody that is lighter on his feet would be good in coverage. I don't think he's going to really hold a candle to James White.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen anyone do anything against James White all year. When we want to use him, we use him, and we use him effectively. So for them to shut him down, I feel like he's going to have a field day. And then you have Gronk, who says he's feeling fucking great as ever, and he seems to be having a great old fucking time. Who the hell do they have to cover him?
We go into the age-old question. Who is built like Gronk and runs like Gronk and plays defense?
Nobody. So if he's feeling himself, and he looked pretty good in the Kansas City game for it being that fucking cold, if he can get rumbling, that's another that's the thing. I mean, it's so funny that as this offense, you know, we get rid of Josh Gordon, you're going, what the hell are we going to do? And then all of a sudden, Edelman starts playing super healthy. Gronk starts playing super, is now in the last couple weeks coming along. You're like, oh, he's healthy. He can play for a fucking game. Like, he can definitely be himself. James White's been nails. Sony Michel's finally coming on, and you're like, wow, there's the first round speed and draft pick, you know, toughness that we were looking for. Burkhead's even playing a lot better. Philip Dorsett is just making catches when we need him. He's not getting the ball a lot, but he's getting the ball effectively. And when we throw it his way, he generally makes the catch, not always. And then Patterson's kind of disappeared a little bit, but you still got him to make a couple big plays. So it's not overwhelming, and it's not a ton, but it's like, it's a weird matchup.
You just skipped right over Chris Hogan. And, how dare you?
Yeah, skipped over Chris Hogan as our third receiver.
He had his best game in 2 months.
Yeah.
Skipped right on over him.
True, I did. We got him too.
Yeah, he's okay. He's got a knack for making plays outside the numbers in big games. I don't know.
Yeah, those little out routes he was doing last week where he got a couple. He was getting those.
At least two or three.
Just feed him those. That's all you need to do. Get him a couple of those. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. This is another one of the things that's really interesting about this matchup is that the Patriots have their like traditional fat package with James Devlin, two tight ends, Sony Michel, and they run the ball 85% of the time in that package. And then they'll also do four wide receivers and James White. I'm including Gronkowski as a wide receiver in that.
Yeah.
So they'll do like three wide receivers, shotgun, scat back. Maybe they'll put the tight end outside the numbers. And they have everything in between as well, including all the motions, all this and that. And you look at the Rams, and they just have they run almost only three receivers, one tight end, one running back. That's it. Under center almost all the time. And it's like it seems like it's so predictable, and because they just have their own lane. They run different things off of it, and they dress it up in different ways, but it's pretty simple. And I just think that the dichotomy of two styles and like how versatile the Patriots and how like narrow the Rams are, but both are very successful.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see also, since Cooper Kupp went down, they are playing more two tight ends. Mm-hmm. They have this dude, Gerald Everett, who they drafted to go maybe, like super freak athlete tight end. And so he plays a lot, but he's a lot.
Yeah. I know. It's we'll see what happens. I mean, it's, you know, we've seen these teams in the past, like you said, that are just rigid. And they're, you know, we're going to beat you at our game because our game's better than yours. And the Patriots are this, and I feel like the last time we saw that was at the Falcons. The Falcons were, you know, the Eagles, we kind of thought that, but then they were doing all kinds of different shit on offense. They were switching it up last year. Peterson came in with a great game plan. He was like, I'm not showing you anything. I have no pride in what I've done before. We're going to make sure we win. Versus this is what we're doing. You can't stop us. And those teams are usually the ones, I mean, obviously, the Falcons game, the game plan was pretty damn good. We couldn't stop them for most of the game until the very end. But
that makes your point exactly for you, is when they were should have been in the 4-minute drill, handing the ball off twice. They were throwing the ball in first down.
Right.
Getting holding penalties and getting a sack and a strip sack.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, maybe you shouldn't have been doing that.
Yeah, maybe you should.
You were too prideful.
Change it up. So the one thing we haven't really touched on much was the secondary of the Rams, which now that Aqib Talib is back, you know, the 20th in the league ranking for them in points, Aqib Talib missed some time, and that number did get a lot better when he was on the field.
Yeah, definitely. They have some good depth in the secondary. You mentioned Aqib Talib. He's 33 years old, but he seems to be playing pretty well.
He's still effective.
He's clearly the leader back there, big physical guy.
Yep.
Peters is a good cornerback. He's been a pro bowler. He has a tendency to take the ball away. He also has a tendency to get beat on double moves and such.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Shields, veteran speedster, been out of the game for a little bit, but seems to be contributing for them mostly on special teams right now. And then Nickell Roby-Coleman, the guy that laid that hit, the defensive pass interference that was not, is another guy. And he's a physical player.
He's been talking some trash this week.
Pretty good. I know. He's been what a dumbass. Is anyone ever going to learn?
Brady's. Yeah, I know.
Why are you shitting on Tom Brady? What are you going to? You think he's going to turn it back around on you?
It wasn't that bad, but it's just like, why do you say anything? Like, you want to give him bulletin board material for him to come yell in your face if he throws it over you for a touchdown.
And then their free safety, LaMarcus Joyner, is a really good player too.
Yeah. And then they got John Johnson the third. He's not bad. All right.
He's pretty good, actually. I was liking what I saw from him last week. He's a hitter.
He's a local boy from BC.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I was also I still can't get over. Why do you name your kid John Johnson? You know his last name's Johnson.
Got lazy. Maybe he's like a younger kid and they're like, "We have no names left."
That's it.
Yeah. We're going to call him John. I don't know. But
J names. We like the
Yep.
Oh, look at this.
Look who it is. But yeah, so I think it really comes down to the matchup where they put Talib. Obviously, is where it all starts and ends, because Peters could get really exposed or have a good game depending on where they put Talib. I think they're going to try and put him on Edelman.
Talib on Edelman?
I think that's the only thing that makes sense.
I don't think so, because Edelman goes in motion so much. I feel like Talib's a guy that likes to set his feet in front of the receiver he's going to cover.
I think
Edelman's always shifting. He's all over the place. And as he's moving side to side, then you got to shuffle with him and somehow try to, because Talib likes to jam people.
Right.
And now you got to jam him as he's already at like a half jog.
The only thing I'm thinking back to the other games they've put when Wade was in Denver, he put Talib on Gronk once, and I thought he put him on Edelman for a big chunk of a game once too.
Oh.
And when he put him on Edelman, Edelman had a tough time with him. And when he put him on Gronk, Gronk did really – he had his way with Gronk for two or three quarters, and then Gronk just owned him in like the last quarter for God knows how many yards. But he ended up winning the matchup. But Talib did pretty good. I mean, I don't think you can put him on Gronk this game because we put Gronk in too much. I mean, maybe if he's lined up out wide, you throw him on there. You make a shift. But now you leave it open. Who's going to cover Edelman? Marcus Peters? I feel like he'll get owned by Edelman.
Yeah, that's not a good matchup for him. They also don't run as much man coverage as the Patriots do. Patriots actually lead the NFL in man coverage.
Really?
Yeah, so they'll play a lot more zone coverage, which is really more Marcus Peters style. He's an off the ball zone coverage in my mind.
They're gonna be screwed if they run zone.
they'll definitely run a good amount of man. I think you're probably gonna see Roby Coleman on Edelman.
They're gonna. You really think so?
I think so. I'm not saying it's a good matchup.
Okay, so what? Give us your matchup. Say if they're a running man. What are you giving us?
Okay, I think you'll probably see Tlaib on Hogan and Coleman on Edelman and Marcus Peters on whoever the third receiver is, Cordarrelle Patterson, Philip Dorsett, whoever the third guy is.
See, me thinking that it's like you're going to lose with those matchups.
Probably.
We won't throw to Chris Hogan. We're going to own you with Edelman and the running backs and Gronk.
It's going to torch up, yeah. I know. So. Who knows? It's going to depend on the situation too. You know,
Sure, of course. I mean, it's not going to be that every time.
You don't know what it's going to. But if it's third and ten, there's a decent chance you're going to see Gronkowski covered by Tlaib.
Absolutely. Third and ten. Right. Or Edelman.
It's going to.
He could get his hands on Edelman. I feel like he would do a good job against him.
If I were them, I would mix it up. See what's working. See what isn't.
Now, generally, Wade plays. He keeps his cornerbacks on whatever side of the field they're on. Generally. But
I don't know.
But you know, it's funny. I feel like this week, I thought I heard a comment about it was, you know, everybody's obviously been talking about, well, Wade's been running the same defense for 30 years or, you know, forever. Yeah. And even Bill mentioned that, like, oh, he runs a great defense, but he's been doing the same type of thing for 30 years. And Wade doesn't seem like was too happy about that. It was like, oh, well, apparently they were like, what do you think about this matchup, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, apparently I've been running the same defense for 30 years, so there you go, or something like that. And it's like, he clearly knows maybe he needs to switch it up, but...
I don't know. Maybe he just feels like he's being disrespected.
Yeah, which would
imagine
be great.
That,
if I would
Belichick's
love it.
Belichick's just, like, making him switch it up.
If he doesn't switch it up, that'd be incredible.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Because, you know, as awesome as these three down D tackles are, I just feel like the 3-4... with the run game, you know, the way they have it set up, at least, it's like, oh my God. It's like there's two gaps in between those D tackles. In between, before you even get to the next man, it's not like, oh, one's on one side, one's on... No. There's two guys, and those are supposed to be filled by linebackers who are going to get crushed by our good old fullback, Devlin's just going to literally... He was mauling... He's used to mauling, like, 270-pound guys. Give him a 225-pound guy. It's like, oh my God, dude. Just get out of the way.
Get him on the ground. We haven't said much about this, but Aaron Donald had 20 sacks there.
Yeah, he's an all-time beast, you know.
He's a stud. And statistically, he's the only good pass rusher. Like, Dominican Sue had, like, 4 sacks. I think Fowler had less than that.
Mm-hmm.
Bukum had less than that. But in the playoffs here, people are playing. Fowler caused that interception in overtime last week. Dominican Sue's been a different player.
Yeah.
Everyone's stepping up.
Sue's definitely showed up.
Yeah, they're playing at their best right now, and it's helping because if you look at the stat sheet, you're like, oh, just double team Aaron Donald and you're fine. It's like, nah, it's not always that easy. I mean, he beats double teams too, which is unfortunate. And oh, just run the ball right at him or run the ball away from him. And he's like, he's kind of a game wrecker. He does everything,
right.
And he's mostly going to be matched up against Joe Tooney, who has been my whipping boy for a while, but. I haven't had anything bad to say about him recently. The job he did against Chris Jones last week was admirable.
Yeah, he did pretty damn good. And Chris Jones is no easy task. He's definitely no Aaron Donald, but it's not.
He's not that far off.
He's not that far off as in terms of where people are in the defensive line in rankings.
Yeah, so it was like a really good tune-up game for those guys, being like, this is a premier defensive tackle. Especially on the pass rushings. And then next week, by the way, you're going to see a superstar. It's like, okay, well, we just saw a premier one.
Yeah.
Just let's take it up.
Now, the only thing I was reading, Dante Scarnecchia's transcript on, you know, what he has to do this week. And just reading what he has to say about it, it's like, you know, he's not the type of guy that goes, oh, we'll see what we do. No. Or, you know, well, we have a shot. We just have to play hard. He's like, that's not how he does. He's like, this is the best defender you're going to ever see. He's like, we're going to have to do everything we can to stop him. We're going to have to, and he's going over techniques. We can't miss a block. He's like, you haven't seen a better defensive tackle. Like, he's basically talking about him like, he's unstoppable. You have no chance. And I just love that approach because it's like, that's what gets people, oh, I have no chance. You don't think I can fucking have a chance against this guy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I have a chance. Like, if I do this, this, and this, I mean, it's just a motivation thing, but... the thing is, he knows the technique. So he's telling them, if you guys do this on the double team, you are most likely going to win. If you fuck up, you will lose. But if you can pull it off, you know, so, and nobody's better at in-game, in-game changes on the offensive line than him. So that's your offensive line weapon.
That's great. Yeah, I know.
You know?
Skarnek is the man. I love that way of motivating them, being like, everyone you've ever met and everyone you ever will meet will all be watching this game.
Yeah.
And they're going to know your opponent's name, and no one's going to know your name. Almost no one's right. going to know you. And, yeah, that's great. Dante Skarnecki, I've been saying this for a while. I think there should be some assistant coaches in the Hall of Fame. There aren't any. You don't get in for being an assistant coach. Like, Wade Phillips is a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator. I know he's done right. some head coaching stints, and it's arguable how good he's been. But Dante Skarnecki, in my mind, is a Hall of Fame offensive line coach.
Dick LeBeau should be, too.
Dick LeBeau's a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator. Just because he was a head coach once upon a time doesn't mean he shouldn't be.
And then what's his name? And the guy in Philly, Johnson. Is that his name? The Jim old
Johnson.
Jim Johnson. He was Jim awesome. Johnson.
Yeah, he was
a blitz. Sick.
Blitz him. Send him.
He was awesome. Back in the day.
There's a bunch of guys like that. Josh McDaniels is building a Hall of Fame offensive coordinator career if he doesn't become a head coach at any point. What a twist that would be if he was actually becoming the Dolphins head coach. Oh my God, I just thought of that.
who would you say?
Josh McDaniels. What a twist if he was the one that becomes the Dolphins
head coach. Oh, that'd be terrible.
That'd be hilarious, though. Oh, he keeps the cat in the bag. But
apparently Scar was bitching about being at Media Day, too. They asked him about it. He's like, I just want to leave. I don't want to be here.
He's 70. Give him a break.
I know, right?
Send him home early, Scar, the man. Yeah, that's going to be, that's the classic way to beat the Patriots, is a defensive tackle that's unblockable. Somebody like Justin Tuck, guys like that. And it's like,
right.
if you get a guy like that, then you have a chance against us, and they have at least one of them, if not more.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a prime focus for what I'm looking for out there.
Well, if anyone can do it, it's Scar.
Yeah. I know. Remember 3 years ago, the last time this team didn't make a Super Bowl was because the offensive line fell apart against the Broncos. A Wade Phillips-led defense.
Yeah.
And now with a lot of guys in common to that. I know Brian Stork was at center, but we had Shaq Mason at right guard. We had Marcus Cannon at right tackle. David Andrews was on that team. He was the backup center.
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't have two. But regardless, some of the same guys. And since then, since DeGelmo left and Skarnecki came back, I got to say, I'm pretty damn confident going to be able to pull this.
Yeah, game. And I'm also Donald lines up primarily. You said he's going to be over Tooney.
Usually he lines up on the offense's left side.
So the other good thing about that is he's lining up against good old Trent Brown. And if Trent Brown has himself a day, when Trent Brown is playing well, I feel like the defender's gone. It's like you didn't even know it was there. He is so fucking big that they're going to.
Oddly enough, I think that might work against him.
You think
Aaron
so?
Donald's like 5'11". He's short dude, plays really low to the ground. Trent Brown's got to bend all the way down there.
His arms are so big and so long.
And if he contacts him and just leans a little bit.
He could probably pick him up.
Oh my God, he could easily pick him up.
That's what I mean. You get under him, just kind of just like give him like an uppercut pickup. He's not going to pick him up.
Not with one hand.
But by God damn, if he's got a double team like that, it's going to be tough to get around him.
He made a great block. It was on the last drive in the fourth quarter against the Chiefs. And Justin Houston gets around the edge. He gets around Gronkowski, actually. Mm. Trent Brown's looking inside to help. And then he notices at the last minute, pushes Justin
Houston. Just puts a hand on him.
Puts one hand on him, pushes an extra yard back. Brady steps up a little. Throws an incomplete pass, but it had all the makings of strip sack to end the game.
Yeah, just in terms of Trent Brown, he's made Joey Bosa and fucking D. Ford and Justin Houston look like little pansies out there the last couple weeks. Some of the best defensive, biggest, fastest, best defensive ends in the league. Joey Bosa is one of the top three defensive ends in the league. I don't know what you want to call it. He made top 10, whatever. He made it look terrible. Ford was...
Man, him disappeared.
Possible contention. If Aaron Donald wasn't there, he would be in contention for defensive MVP of the league. He didn't even show up. You didn't hear from D. Ford once until he made a egregious, awful penalty.
Dude, everyone knows those guys are good. You don't have to hype them extra. Dee Ford was not the runner-up to Defensive Player of the Year.
Wasn't he
if
up there?
If anybody was, it might have been Chris Jones. No, they haven't voted on it yet. They announced it on Saturday before the Super Bowl.
I've heard his name floated around in there, I guess.
He's real good. But, yeah, Trent Brown's been amazing against really good defensive players. They're just going to have that has to continue. Remember preseason? I was just thinking about this. The Rams won the offseason, right? Traded for Brandon Cooks, Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters. Traded for Dante Fowler in season. They were a fashionable pick to go to the Super Bowl. And the Patriots are, let's be honest, kind of always a common pick to go to the Super Bowl. And so I bet there were a ton of people that predicted this was going to be the matchup.
Probably.
It must have been super common. And then what I wanted to stress about that is people kind of look at the Rams and they go, oh, they were 20th in defense. And maybe they laid a stinker against Chicago and they got beat by the Eagles at home. And they kind of had a couple rough games down the stretch. It's like they're a really, really goddamn good team. Everyone thought they were stacked. You look at their roster, it's loaded. Their coaching staff's unbelievable. The defense underperformed. So part of that had to do with injuries. I think a lot of that had to do with attitude. And now they're playing their best football.
You think so?
They're not playing their best football. With Cooper Kupp, they won.
Yeah.
But
I think up to week like 13 or 14, they're the best.
I think defensively, they're playing their best football right now.
Yeah.
Offensively, they peaked early. But they're playing okay. They're playing pretty
well. They did do well against the run last week, which is not their forte, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is a really good team. Don't try to. If the Rams beat the Patriots, this isn't going to be the shock of my lifetime.
No.
It's not going to be the 07 Giants.
No.
I'm not going to feel that way. But I do like the Patriots' chances. I think the matchups favor them. I think our offensive line is playing as well as it has in years. I think their linebackers don't match up well with our running backs. I think that our defensive backs match up really well with their receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And our linebackers are playing top-notch football right now. I mean, I think most signs point to the Pats.
On top of all of it, Jared Goff is going to shit his pants at some point or another in this game.
That's what we needed to hear.
I can't see him playing a flawless game. He was having a panic attack in the Saints game. He didn't know what was going on. He was freaking out. He was on the bench. They're down by 14. He doesn't know what the hell's going on. The communication, the earpieces weren't working. He's yelling at his receivers. I mean, he scored three points into the fourth quarter, or going close to the fourth, whatever it was, close to it. I mean, Belichick against him, Belichick's going to fuck with that guy's head. He's going to say, oh, we're blitzing these four and dropping these four back into coverage. Oh, no, we're not. Complete reversal. 2-2. 4, you know, a complete opposite. He's going to sending everyone, drop everyone, look like nobody's going, send everybody. He's going to just screw with him as much as possible. And we did it against Mahomes for a first half last game. And Mahomes is twice the quarterback that Goff is, if not more. So on top of all this, you know, McVay is great at drawing up offensive game plans. You can't take anything away from what he's done with this team. They were like a 4-12 team when he showed up, and then they go to the playoffs and then the Super Bowl the next 2 years. Goff was a bust at the time, and now he is obviously playing in the Super Bowl. So, and even a MVP candidate runner earlier in the season, I think that kind of tailed off a little bit, but he's not going to be able to do it. I mean, Nick Foles, I said the same fucking thing about him last year. Nick Foles was an old guy at the time. I guess the pressure hasn't gotten to him, and we've seen him late in the year, now the past couple of years, do pretty fucking good. But Goff, we haven't seen that. We've only seen him in big games where he hasn't done much. I mean, he played great against the Saints the first time around and great against the Chiefs, so he's shown up in these big games. But the playoffs haven't been as kind to him. So
I think Jared Goff will throw an interception this game.
He will throw multiple interceptions.
I don't think that he is some sort of big game turtle, that he's going to freak out and not show up, despite the fact that he's the second youngest quarterback ever to start a Super Bowl.
Oh, dude, he hasn't played Bill Belichick yet.
Okay. I give him more credit than you, but I understand where you're coming from.
So far, he's got 58.8. This is in the playoffs. 58.8 completion percentage, 7.1 for average, not bad. 39 is the long, very nice. 252 yards per game, one touchdown, one interception. 68 QBR, 79 quarterback rating.
All right.
Mediocre. Quite mediocre.
Playoffs against two really good defensive teams. One really good defensive team. One.
Well, I'm not saying it's not hard. It's
quite
hard. I'm just saying I don't think he's got – I mean, he hasn't shown that he's got the balls to be able to do it. Bill Belichick is going to fuck with him badly.
That's going to be my favorite part of this game.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what they do. Especially that the matchups are good. You know, the matchups on the back end are good, so he can do whatever the fuck he wants with his front seven or eight. It's like,
yeah, a lot of
good luck with that. So, yeah.
We didn't mention special teams. I'll do that real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Zuerlein hit a long, what was it, like a 47-yarder to send it to overtime.
He's a good kicker.
58-yarder to win it.
Quality
kicker. That's notable. Johnny Hecker has thrown more passes than their backup quarterback or some shit. He had another first down.
Bill Belichick loves him.
Loves him. He can kick the ball too. He's not just a quarterback playing punter.
They did a fake punt last week for a big conversion.
Yeah, we keep saying that the some of the best teams in the NFL are the most balanced, and that includes special teams. And it's no coincidence that some of the best special teams units are still around at this time of year. Their returner is teeny. I looked it up. He's 153 pounds.
Wow.
He's probably the smallest guy
in the league.
Smallest non-kicker in the NFL in like 10 years. He's teeny.
How tall is he? 5'6"?
He's 5'7".
Holy shit. Must have wheels.
JoJo Natson. You'll see him out there.
JoJo, perfect name.
Yeah. He's tiny. It's fun to watch, though. What do you say we do predictions?
So
did you remember my prediction from last game? Because it was 37-30.
Oh, was it?
Yep.
Very nice. What was mine? Do you remember?
Not that.
No, fair enough. I'm saying this, and this is because I'm very biased, and Patriots, every Super Bowl we've ever played in, everybody knows how fucking close they are. The biggest win of margin of victory was 6 points, which was against the overtime game where we were down 28-3 the whole fucking time.
Yeah.
So everything else has come down to a field goal or last minute, whoever gets the ball last, whatever. Even the ones we've fucking lost have come down to that. So I don't think that's going to happen this time because I don't fucking want it to happen this time. And I'm going to manifest it so it doesn't happen, okay? So we're going 31-20. We're going to have plenty of time throughout. They're going to get two touchdowns, two field goals. We're going to have a steady lead the whole time. We're not going to be freaking out. The rest of the country is going to go, why the fuck can't anyone beat these motherfuckers? Why are they still winning? And we're going to sit here and smile, and we're going to be drinking our beer, eating our great food, going, ha, it's great to be a Patriots fan. Fuck all you other people. You all suck. We're winning. We're doing it. We're doing it again. And then Tom Brady's going to get it. And I think James White is going to be the MVP of the game.
That's one I would take that a non-Tom Brady will win the MVP. That's got to be one of the bets up.
Oh, definitely. I think well, Brady's like his odds. It's like you win nothing if he gets MVP. It's like it's almost like 1-1.
I guess. But if the Rams win, then it's like almost for sure that a Patriots guy won't win.
Right.
And there's probably a 40% chance, something like the Rams win. Yes, I just put a percent.
Sean.
I go closer. I think it is going to be a one-score game. I think it's going to be a nail-biter throughout. And if the Patriots score first, they're going to win. You know that they've never scored in the first quarter of a Super Bowl?
Last year, they scored a field goal.
Oh, yeah. No, never a touchdown.
Never a touchdown. But, yeah, no, never. So Brady knows that one, too. I remember before the last Super Bowl, they were saying that. Belichick is like, can you get me a touchdown in the first quarter? And they keep saying that, and he's going to do it this time. We're going to get up. Both. We're going to get up early. We're going to stay up. It's going to remain close, and then we're going to pull away just enough in the end where it's like, oh, perfect.
So I'm going 27-23, Patriot.
Okay.
I think the Rams will have the ball at the end of the game, and they will need a touchdown, and they will not get one.
Oh, why would you put us in that situation?
Dude, that's what I think is going to happen.
So stressful.
It's
already.
These games are always stressful.
I hope it's not.
Time.
I would just love for us to go and just beat the shit out of them. It's like 41. I don't even give a fuck if it's a good game. 41-7. Like, we're just basically just did what we did to the Chargers against them. It's like, oh, wouldn't that be incredible?
It'd make for a very enjoyable evening.
It would.
I'll tell you that much.
But usually it doesn't go that way. But we'll see. We're going to manifest it. Everyone else together. Everyone, We're going to manifest.
Dude, you with the manifesting. Did you just watch The Secret?
No, we're going to manifest it, though. It's true. It's going to happen.
Keep saying it. All right, all of you out there, please write that in your journals. Think about it.
Manifest destiny, baby.
Okay. That's going to do it for us. Let's hope that is manifested, and we can get back next week and do another epic podcast about a Patriots victory. But that remains to be seen, so all we can do is hope.
All we can do is hope.
Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week to go over this win or lose, and enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday. These don't happen that often. I know it
seems like they do.
We're skewed by history right now. This does not happen forever. Enjoy every one of these, because before you know it, it's going to be 30 years before you go to one. Just ask Eagles.
Yeah, literally.
All right. Talk to you soon. See you.
Adios.